Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program, and editor-in-chief of Chicken Whisperer magazine. Today is Monday, June 23rd, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, I welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, cooking, gardening, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, and subscribe to the free digital edition of Chicken Whisperer magazine. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in today to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. Cackle Hatchery is a third-generation, family-owned and operated hatchery. They offer over 193 varieties of poultry shipped directly from their facility in Missouri. It's their mission to enhance your life by providing you with quality poultry for showing, meat, enjoyment, eggs, and pets. They specialize in hatching purebred poultry and shipping day-old chicks right to your local post office since 1936. 4-H and FFA Youth Poultry Clubs get a 10% discount. Check out their website, cacklehatchery.com, for posted weekly specials and discounts. That's cacklehatchery.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your chicken fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. I hope you're having a great Monday. I hope you had a great weekend with family and friends. I know I sure did. Spent some time with some family over the weekend and some extended family, so we did have a good time. Hey, this is the last week, the very last week. In fact, there's only 4 more days to enter the May/June Ultimate Chicken Coop Contest, brought to you by Curtis Coops and Yard Barns. Visit them online. Take a look at all the products that they offer, and there's a ton of them. But you only got 4 more days to enter, so I'm going to tell you how to do that, and then we're going to get on with the show with our guest today, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Great topic today. Get those Chicken Whisper notebooks, pens, and papers out while I cover the coop contest information, so you'll be ready to take those notes to keep your backyard flock happy and healthy. So all you got to do to enter the coop contest is send me an email. Yep, that is it. contest@chickenwhisperer.com. That's where you're going to send it. contest@chickenwhisperer.com. In the subject line of the email, you're going to put coop contest. How simple is that? Coop contest in the subject line of the email. Then in the email itself, I need your name, your phone number, and your shipping address. That's it. No worries. Send it over to me, and you are entered. 1 email per person, per household. So let me explain this. If there are 19 people in your home and you all have a different email address, then you can all enter. If you want to walk door to door through your subdivision and visit all 250 homes, if they all want to enter and then have the ship coop to you, that's fine. Have the coop shipped to you, that's no problem, as long as they all have a separate email address, okay? So 1 entry per person per email address. It is that simple. Number 2, you can enter no matter where you live on this planet. If you live in Japan and want to enter, knock yourself out. If you live in Europe and you want to enter, go ahead and enter. But we are only going to ship that coop, fully assembled, mind you, to the lower 48 states of this great land. But you can still enter if you live in Europe. You can just row your dinghy right over here to the coast, maybe the port of Savannah, Georgia, pick up that coop and row your dinghy right on back. So you can enter if you live in Europe. If you live in Canada, it might be a little bit easier, especially if you live near the border, because we'll ship that coop somewhere, maybe to a holding facility or to a shipping place or maybe to a friend that you know, or maybe you can find a friend on a chicken forum on Facebook. Hey, can I have this coop shipped to your address if I win? I live in Canada. Come on across the border in your pick-em-up truck, pick that coop up if you win, drive it on home. So you can enter no matter where you live on this planet. We're only going to ship that coop to the lower 48 states. How about that? So, no, because a lot of people always post, well, I wish I could enter. I live in Australia. You can enter. Go right ahead. I'm not stopping you. Just row your dinghy over here and pick it up, because we're only going to ship it to the lower 48 states. So that's how that works. The contest officially ends this Thursday at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We will announce the winner this Friday on this radio show live. We will call them live. Maybe they'll pick up. If they do, it's always a fun show. If not, no worries. You do not have to be listening live to enter or win, but it just makes it fun. We'll still contact you via email, telephone, Facebook, the whole nine yards. And, of course, this contest is not affiliated with Facebook in any way. All right, let's go on with the show today. We've got Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Let's give him a big welcome. Hey, Peter, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, Andy. How are you?
I'm hanging in there one day at a time, my friend. So I know you don't need to win this coop because you have, like, the Taj Mahal of all coops in your backyard already. So I know you don't need to win this sucker, but maybe you enter and you win, and you can give it to one of your awesome customers. But, and I know you don't need it because your coop is the bomb. So
I don't know if ours is the bomb, but it's a coop.
It's awesome. Hey, I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce the illness we're talking about today. But I did Google it and researched, I say researched, read about it just a little bit to wet my whistle. So I'm going to let you do that. But, folks, get your pen and paper out because this is something you probably want to be familiar with Peter Brown. I'm going to turn it over to you, my friend.
Okay. It's called Klebsiella, and it's spelled K-L-E-B-S-I-E-L-L-A. The last word is pneumonia, P-N-E-U-M-O-N-I-A-E. And it's ubiquitous in nature, meaning it's everywhere. It's quite common. It's a natural inhabitant of the guts of most animals, especially grazing animals, can be picked up from the soil. It's very common to find it in humans. It's common to find it in chickens as well. So if it's this common, then, you know, why are we talking about it today? The basic reason I'm bringing this up today, and I think we talked about it a couple of years ago or so, we're starting to see a little bit more of it. It's not such a big deal in the commercial poultry industry, but I have had a few folks contact me in relation to it over the last couple of 3 months. So I thought, not a bad time to go back and review this, because it can turn ugly. It just depends on where it turns up and how much of it is there, and then it depends as to what other players may or may not be involved. For instance, another normal gut inhabitant that stays down in the lower part of the intestine and cohabitates with this one would be E. coli. We're all familiar with E. coli. For those that don't know, you know, we're in the summertime now, so if you're listening to the news and you hear them say that the coliform count in the river, lake, swimming pool, or whatever is high and you can't go swimming in it, all that means is there's too much poop in the water. And that's how they evaluate that, and that's how they make those determinations. So too much sewage in the water is where that one comes from. But
Yeah, you know, when I go swimming, I always want to make sure that there's not much poop. You know, as long as if there's not much poop in the water, then I'm okay. But once that level gets up to be classified as too much poop, then I'm not cool with that either yet.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of any of that, so I'll be honest with you. I gave up on swimming in the ocean a long time ago. And I'll take my chances in my bathtub. A little bit safer, I think.
There you go.
But so at any rate, this is found, like I said, all throughout nature. It's actually kind of a unique organism that actually thrives in the soil with plants, because it helps plants grow by binding nitrogen from the soil and the air to the plant roots. So it can cohabitate there as well. And one of the big deals with this particular organism, at the moment, it's a bigger deal on the human side. You might remember, I believe it was back in 2011, there was a huge outbreak of this at the National Institutes of Health Hospital in Bethesda, Maryland, not all that far from here, about 100 miles or so. And this was brought into the hospital unbeknownst basically to them, and from a patient that was transferred in from another hospital. I don't remember all the particulars of it, but at any rate, this became quite a problem, and that's another reason why I bring it up. People need to know if it's in your birds and you could possibly have a problem with something. It's nice to know. One more reason for washing your hands in a reasonable fashion, and doesn't mean you have to freak out and keep the place sterile, because that's no good either. But at any rate, they had an outbreak there. It started out with one person, and then it spread to other people. They ended up, I think there were 18 people that ended up with this infection coming from one person. And out of that 18, six died. Now, bear in mind that a lot of these folks that were at this particular hospital at that time were very ill people. this disease organism is a little bit more opportunistic, and that's another reason why I bring it up. A lot of people's birds are under stress from different things. I certainly see it. Maybe the average person doesn't see it, but I see it in what I do every day. And I don't mean this particular organism. I mean the stress of different other problems that people have. It doesn't mean that this will take over, but it is an opportunistic one. So with these people, it was opportunistic. Their immune systems were under attack from other things, and so on. And at any rate, it took over that hospital basically for the most part. I mean, or a portion of it, and they were. You know, at rope's end to stop this thing in that hospital. I mean, they tore out plumbing, threw everything away, built walls to try to keep people from spreading it that way. They put up monitors to monitor people coming in and out, so they had to pay somebody to stand there and say, okay, you know, your gloves go in the trash here, and your gown goes over here, and you got to wash your hands over here. They went through all of this and still had a problem, okay? And long story short, they eventually solved it by figuring out how it really worked and how it spread. A lot of genetic testing going on to figure everything out. And on the flip side, as you might say, well, it's just a bacteria. Why don't they medicate it? Well, this particular bacteria worldwide now is becoming and has become antibiotic resistant to even the most powerful antibiotics that are generally held in reserve for situations just like this. So it's a very difficult one. So my point today is, you know, let's not let it get a hold in our flocks. Let's be cognizant of what's going on. Let's pay attention. Don't over-medicate. I have been talking for quite some years now about moving away from antibiotics, not only in this country, but in what I do. I try to encourage people, you know, to try to use the turmeric, the oil of oregano, and other things. If you're going to be using a insecticide, the poultry protector products work well. See, the issue that a lot of folks have is kind of like, from my perspective, the way I see it, it's a twofold thing. It's money on one hand. And it is, I want it now, and I want it done now, and I want these bugs off my birds immediately, and I want everything to die right this second. And with your more natural products, you don't get that kind of kill rate that you would get with your chemicals, certainly on the insecticide side. That's very true. The poultry protector products, while they work at a much slower rate. The good thing about them is you could use them every day if you had to, but see, most people don't want to be that involved. Too much work, and, you know, but some people, I can agree with that. But, you know, moving away from all of these things, I mean, they're doing it in Europe. we are going to end up doing it here. I had a conversation with a couple of folks here in the area about the poultry companies here starting to move away from the antibiotic use and dedicating certain farms. I know, and I said this before on the show, Purdue has taken an entire processing facility in Pennsylvania, closed it down, and redoing the whole thing, and only organics going to move through that facility. We're seeing more and more of the restaurant chains wanting to get in on this thing as well, and the I think it's the Chipotle restaurants. I know Panera Bread is one. Whole Foods, all these kinds of different places are wanting the antibiotic-free chicken, turkey, pork, and beef, and so on. So it's coming. It's just a lot slower here. The lobbyists for the companies that make the antibiotics and all the other chemical stuff is pretty strong in this country, and they'll stave it off as long as they can, and then they'll eventually you'll see a big move to the more natural type of a treatment. You'll still have your antibiotics then being held in reserve for cases where nothing works, and then that but that's better than just doing it the way it's been done over the years. I dare say most companies now are not even going to think about using an antibiotic for growth promoting. I think that's pretty much, mm-hmm. for the most part, at least in my neck of the woods. I can't speak for what goes on elsewhere, but they know people don't want it. The cost of these things today is high, and I know they continue to work on, you know, the genetic aspects of all of this stuff as far as growth is concerned, getting birds to, you know, grow faster, put on more more weight, better feed conversion, and that kind of thing. So at any rate, we'll move on a little bit here. So this is a normal inhabitant of the intestinal tract. That would be called an enteric pathogen, meaning in the intestines of poultry, humans, and most other animals that are around, so it can be readily picked up. This particular organism, what makes it hard to combat with an antibiotic is that it is what's called an encapsulated organism. We've all heard me talk before. We've talked about cell wall, no cell wall.
Yeah.
So when we talked about, let's say, coryza, which has a cell wall, okay, and then we talked about mycoplasma, which had no cell wall, the cell wall keeps it organized, and it's a line of defense to keep the organism from being invaded by outside entities like antibiotics and stuff. A cell wall is a lot easier to break down than this particular organism, which has an actual capsule. That capsule, because of the way it presents itself, if you looked at it under a microscope, you would see that this organism, for lack of a better term, looks like a snot ball, because it's often called a slime capsule, because that's just what it looks like. And so we have that slime capsule on the outside, which is quite thick. Then you have the cell wall, okay, or the cell membrane, protecting it as well. So you kind of have a double whammy effect with the, I guess you could look at the this capsule being like a hardened bunker in Iraq or Afghanistan or something like that, a missile silo where they've hardened the outside of it with concrete. Well, this would kind of like be the same thing. And it's able to ward off these things. And it's also able to change so that these things that have been able to penetrate it in the past may not be able to penetrate it down the road. So, and this is what has made part of this thing antibiotic resistant, besides the capsule itself, but the ability of the capsule to change in such a fashion that this antibiotic and so on can't get through and destroy it. But just so we're all clear on it, this capsule lies on the outside of the cell wall, okay? So it's kind of like taking an egg, which already has the shell, which you can consider the cell wall, and then putting a bowl over top of it, and that's the capsule, so to speak. One of the other reasons that I brought this up, I've done a series not only on this show but for the Chicken Whisperer magazine. We talked about late deads and egg breakouts and that kind of thing. And this can be found on occasion to be the culprit for these late deads, sometimes even for the early deads, usually somewhere between day one and 7 days, and then again out around. You might even see it earlier. You might even see it 14, 15 days in that range as the embryo prepares to take the yolk into the body cavity. The yolk material becomes infected with the Klebsiella, and so what it'll end up doing is that the yolk material will have a putrid smell to it, be relatively toxic, sometimes we'll see this yolk material get coagulated and thick. I've seen it in birds that fail to absorb the yolk sac completely, when you open them up on post-mortem, you'll see maybe maybe it's half the size of a penny still attached to the intestinal wall where it never finished absorbing in. And there your early deads, if they survive the incubation process and they make it out of the shell, there are lots of times they're the ones that you hear chirping loudly. They never shut up. When you look at them, their shanks and hock joints are shrunken, and lots of times they'll be red. It's a dehydration indication. This is one of the reasons why, I talk about it all the time, probably sound like a broken record, but taking every egg that doesn't hatch, you know, people get excited. They put eggs in an incubator to get 85-90% hatched. They just tickle to death. They could care less about the rest of them. But you really need to see why the others, didn't hatch, so that you can take a look at it. And if there is a problem, head it off before it becomes a huge problem. And I've been looking at some photos. Actually, I've got to get back to the person this evening, but I've been looking at some photos of some birds that didn't hatch. And while I cannot say from the photos exactly what the problem was, I can look at the photos and give a pretty good guess as to what age they actually died. And then you start looking at all of the things, such as Klebsiella, could be an E. coli infection, could be Salmonella, could be a whole slew of things that could point to that kind of embryo mortality out at 18 days or so, 15, 16 days. Rough handling, all kinds of things can go into it. The egg could be too dry, it could be too wet, all of these things. The embryo could possibly drown in the shell. So it's a good idea to, and it's time-consuming. It's a pain in the neck, I know that, and it's not the most pleasant thing to do sometimes, but you really owe it to yourself and you owe it to your flock to take a look at these things and figure out what's gone on, what's gone wrong, and what caused it at the end of the day. But I know a lot of people don't, and this particular instance, the mortality rate for the birds that didn't hatch was almost 100%. And, without the way the pictures were presented to me, I'm not able to see all of the things that I really needed to see, but I can see enough to determine the day that the bird died, and I can give an educated guess as to, what may have caused the problem. But, a lot of people don't realize, about, and again, I go back and I say this, the egg has already incubated for pretty close to 24 hours from the time it was the egg was laid. It's already 24 hours old in the embryo. It's not waiting on you to incubate it. That's those cells were dividing and splitting and so on. Inside of the hen before she even laid that egg. So after the egg is laid, it behooves you to take extremely good care of that egg. And when you don't, the consequences of not taking care of it are great. Decreased hatch, poor quality chicks. Because look, anybody can hatch the darn things. You can put a bunch of eggs in your oven, and if you control the temperature and the humidity, you can hatch them out. The issue is, can you hatch out good chicks that are good quality, that are healthy, that you're not going to have to tend to every 5 seconds with an antibiotic or some other medication or tube feed them or some other thing, or they're chirping crazily, they won't shut up, or they end up having other growth problems later on down the road. I mean, I see it all the time. Believe me, I do. So it's important. It's an important thing to do. Bear in mind that this particular organism in many cases, not all, resistant to a very wide array of antibiotics. This goes from some of the simplest ones, which would be your tetracyclines, all the way up to the fluoroquinolones and beyond. The fluoroquinolones being your cipro-Betril, that type of thing. And there's a popular one out there that I've seen around, people toting around called Bactrim. You've probably heard it yourself. And that's a combination of sulfamethoxazole and trimethoprim. And in many cases, it's resistant to that as well. So, again, you know, it just makes good sense to know that this is out there, that this is a potential problem. Now, we'll talk for a minute about translocation. And translocation just means the organism moving, for whatever reason, from one place in the body of the bird where it is comfortable, okay, to another area outside of the norm. So let's look at this and say we know that this stays in the lower part of the intestine, roughly in what we would call the colon, about the last third or so of the intestinal tract of the bird. And as long as it stays there, it's not a big deal. It's when it migrates away from there and starts to make its way up the intestinal tract and infect other organs that we start to see this, and mainly getting a blood infection of it going. Okay, so then we start to see areas where this particular disease organism doesn't belong, and we start to see that in the heart, the liver, the spleen, in places like that. And again, in the yolk sac of the embryos. Now, here's an interesting thing that comes to mind on this, as I've investigated this particular organism many, many times over the years. And many times you look at a bird, and the bird is healthy. There are no untoward signs, meaning it's not giving you any inkling of an idea at the moment that it's sick. One of the methodologies for this to transfer to the embryo is through infected sperm. Okay. Yeah, who would have thought? You know, but it does happen that way. It's been proven. Okay, so. You can have birds that are normal, because I get this from people all the time to say, hey, you know, I put 24 eggs in the incubator and, you know, 23 didn't hatch. And, you know, I gave some of the same eggs to a friend and they didn't hatch over there either. Well, I mean, we got a problem going on here, because, you know, the friend is hatching their birds left and right and you can't hatch any. So, you know, we do have a problem. And there again, it's important to take all of those eggs, break them out into little throwaway plastic styrofoam or paper plates and whatever, so that you can take a look at them. And if you don't know, if you can always send me pictures, I'll be glad to look at them. So you can have a bird that appears to be happy and healthy, and that it's actually passing something on that you really don't want. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, that is part, you know, part of the problem. And here again, I'll throw this out there because this is important. Intestinal overgrowth is generally where this kind of stuff starts. So this is for those people who constantly feed their birds things other than their normal feed. See, if you don't interrupt, and this goes for humans as well, if you don't eat a bunch of garbage, guess what? You're probably not going to have a stomach ache very often. You know what I mean? I mean, if you're one of those people who likes to sit down every night and eat a half a gallon of ice cream, you know, good luck to you, because, you know, it's going to show up in your gut for sure. Same thing with chickens. I mean, look, we've got 17 birds here that we do absolutely nothing for every day other than to give them plenty of feed, plenty of clean, cool water at this time of the year, good, clean place to sleep, and a yard to run around in. And that's it. There are, you know,
they don't get warm blueberry oatmeal in the morning, Peter.
No, they do not. And we don't feed them eggs. It's not necessary. I mean, look, We've talked about it before. If that makes you happy, go ahead and do it. But I will tell you that when you upset that gut flora, we've talked about this a number of times.
Oh, yeah.
A number of times. Okay? That gut flora, if you've got it right and you're getting nice, well-formed droppings from your birds, leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
Leave it alone. I mean, I can't tell you. I gave them this, I gave them that, I did this, I did that, and now they're all sick. And again, when you upset that good gut flora, the good gut-friendly bacteria that's been keeping the immune system of that bird, don't forget, 60% plus of their immune cells lie in the intestinal tract. You got a messed up gut and have a messed up bird. It's just that simple. Even worse for day-old chicks, born sterile to start with, so whatever junk you put in them right from the get-go, going to stay right there. And the intestine not even being mature, so the immune system is not even fully developed, because it's going to take another 7, 8, 10 days, maybe even in some cases for bigger birds, 14 days for that intestine to finish developing. Just because it's a fluffed out little chick that just came out of the incubator and you're all fat, dumb, and happy with it, doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
The cecal tonsils, which are responsible for really breaking down most of the fiber in a bird's diet, take at least 6 weeks to finish developing. So we don't have a bird that's completely finished its development cycle. It looks like it on the outside because they're cute and they're running around, they're chirping and they're eating and jumping all over mama and hiding under her wings and all those cute little things. But they are extremely vulnerable. So don't take birds that you've got that are healthy and make them unhealthy by giving them a bunch of junk. And it's just that simple. And the more you do it, the more you have bacteria like this that are not necessarily harmful in the beginning, but you get this intestinal overgrowth, and then it'll start permeating the intestinal wall, it'll get into the body cavity, it'll get into the bloodstream, and everywhere. So, I mean, it's just really, really, really important from my perspective to go and take care of it that way. The best friend you'll ever have for a day-old chick is good, fresh, clean water with a good probiotic in it. Maybe some vitamins, electrolytes in it, and that's it. Don't need a whole lot of other stuff. Just don't. And once you populate that intestine with the proper gut-friendly bacteria, if it's got a real good hold on the bird, you have an intestine that is going to be tough for the bad guys to set up because there's no place for them to hang out on the intestinal wall because your gut-friendly bacteria is already occupying it. And your gut-friendly bacteria is producing acid, changing the pH of that intestine, telling the bad guys, hey, and no place for you in this town. Move on.
Right.
And, it just makes, real good sense to me. I don't know. So that's the other way that this thing gets started, by upsetting the intestinal balance that you've already worked hard to get, and then this thing takes over and becomes a problem. Otherwise, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. You probably, if you were to swab your own nostrils, somebody would probably pick it up. But it is a problem throughout the United States in hospitals. There are many hospitals now that have problems with Klebsiella. Okay? And I just heard this on the radio, so I'll throw this out. I heard this first thing this morning, so I know nothing more about it than what I'm about to say, and that's not much. Okay, but under the new rules, under the Obamacare and whatever, hospitals are now going to be penalized for their inability to clean themselves up.
Yep.
And they're also going to be penalized for patients who come there and pick up an infection there, because it's quite common today to go to a hospital and pick up an infection. And I thought this was interesting, and I don't not read it. I just heard it on the radio while I was out and about this morning, and they said that one of the worst offenders are your teaching hospitals. I thought that was kind of interesting. Where they're supposed to be teaching people to take care of things and so on and so forth. But it also may be that they may also have some of the sickest patients too. So it's not as clear cut, as they are doing such a lousy job. It might not be that. these things are not easy to control. And I think the National Institutes of Health Hospital in Bethesda, Maryland, back in 2011, found that out the hard way. They spent literally hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, trying to control this thing in that hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and for the most part, in the very beginning, couldn't do it. People who had no contact with the original patient were still coming down with this thing. That's how bad it was. So, and I'm not saying the ones that are in Poultry. I'm saying this is basically benign for the most part until it has that opportunity to do something, and then it will. So this makes good sense to me to take care of business the right way. Don't upset that gut. It's a very, very important part of a bird's well-being. Do you want to take a commercial break, and I'll come back and go
let's
some
do that. Let's do that. No problem. Folks, we're talking with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor today. Hope you've been taking notes. If you join the show at any time after we started, no worries, because this show, along with 900 others, are archived for your listening pleasure. So after the show, maybe 15 minutes, it'll be archived, and you can listen to this show in its entirety. And we hope that you will do that. So we'll return with more Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown right after we return.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust.
You've just entered a dimension of dirty water, a dimension of poop-filled water, a dimension of stagnant water. You've crossed into the Dirty Waterer Zone. But up ahead is your signpost to cleaner water, the Brightap Chicken Waterer. The Brightap Waterer is fully covered. Chickens drink from special valves, so dirt and droppings can't get into the water. Chickens get sparkling clean water. You get less work. No poop-filled water pans for you to touch or wash out. Brightap, clean water made simple. Visit chickenwaterer.com to learn more. That's chickenwaterer.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Are you in the market for a new chicken coop? Want one that will outlast all the others? Then check out Urban Coop Company.
All of their coops are made from 100% appearance-grade Western red cedar with galvanized hardware and advanced all-weather joinery right here in the USA. Compared to other coops, Urban Coop Company coops will last longer and look better doing it. They're designed to be both beautiful and functional. In fact, they have earned the Chicken Whisperer seal of approval and are Chicken Whisperer approved. I invite you to browse their website to learn more about the many features of their coops and check out their integrated coop accessories that will make your life easier. Urban Coop Company is a family-owned business located in Dripping Springs, Texas, USA. They are passionate about building great coops because they know you're passionate about your backyard chickens. Visit them online at urbancoopcompany.com. That's urbancoopcompany.com.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Again, our guest today, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. If you're taking notes right now, go ahead and jot that down. Visit them after the show, FirstStateVetSupply.com. Take a look at what they have to keep your backyard chickens happy and healthy, including take a look at their emergency medicine kit. And that would be to add to your existing first aid kit, but it's an emergency medicine kit. More times than not, we've heard on the show when I've had Peter on, we'll have people call in. This is what I've, the symptoms, these are the signs. They'll recommend doing something. Do you have some of this? No. So now we have to, they would have to go and find it, buy it, have it shipped, 2 or 3 days delay in getting the proper care to their chickens. And so this kit contains a lot of very useful emergency medicine in smaller containers. So you don't have to, hopefully you never have to use it, but you don't have to have a $80 bottle of something with an expiration date that's going to go bad. You've got a $6 bottle of something that you don't have invested, but you may or may not need that specific medicine for your chickens anyway, but the other one you do. So that's kind of how the emergency medicine kit works, is that so many medications today are so expensive. They have an expiration date, and you have it to be on hand, to have on hand for a possible injured or ill chicken, and then it just goes bad. You're like, oh, I'm just not going to buy anymore. It's so expensive. But this way you can have what you need to get the starting dose while you purchase more if need be. So that's how. So check it out. FirstStateVetSupply.com, the emergency medicine kit there, $24.95, and take a look at that at his website. Peter, thanks for staying with us, and we will continue and wrap it up during this segment.
Yeah, one of the other things, just sitting here thinking about it, with this hatching, it's another problem that comes into play, too. We talked about the infected yolk sac, but even if that goes well, and there is a, whether it be Klebsiella or any other, Pseudomonas, E. coli, or any of those, you know, Staphylococcus around either in a hatch tray or wherever you're hatching your birds or on yourself or whatever, when birds are hatched and, you know, the yolk sac is taken into the body, and then the navel area is supposed to close. Well, if it doesn't close 100%, or if it's slow closing, or you actually get an infection there because there's a direct route to the intestinal tract and in the body cavity. So you can get it that way, too, and that's called navel ill. So I just thought I'd throw that out there, too. And then, you know, when you get those kind of things, birds that do survive the hatch, you can still, your first week's mortality usually, not always, but usually is related to hatching problems, whether it be dehydration or a bacterial or fungal infection or something like that. Generally speaking, we look at that kind of mortality during the first 7 days as a hatching-related problem. And many times. And again, and I know a lot of people can't do this, but in actuality, I've got some folks that I've been helping do this, actually do some postmortems on some birds, and picked up that disease poster and stuff, and found that it's a godsend to them. Now they understand where they're at when they're inside the bird, looking around and everything else. But you owe it to yourself, you owe it to your flock to do a post on every bird that dies. You need to know why. And you know, a lot of people will look at it and say, well, it's just nature. Well, yeah, to a degree, that's true. But you are so much better off, and you will be able to head off other possible problems. You know, if it's a congenital problem that's genetic-wise, and you look at it, then you might want to be able to change your breeding stock. If it's a bacterial contamination thing, then you may want to go on a cleaning spree and clean things up in the incubator. And you know, I know a lot of people that I've dealt with over the years, they want to hatch every egg that they can hatch. They don't care if it's a mud ball or not. And, you know, taking them and cleaning them up and putting them in an incubator and getting all the dirt and feces off of it and everything else. Yeah, I just wouldn't be hatching those kind of eggs. The chance of contaminating everybody else after it hatches, or exploding in the incubator or with exploding eggs or poppers, whatever you want to call them, is too great. Yeah, and from my perspective, you have too much of an investment in all of these other birds. You want them to come out and be healthy. Sure, in a great world, in a perfect world, you know, hatch them all 100% all the time. Everybody lives happily ever after. Not in the world we live in. It would be nice if it happened that way, but it just doesn't. But at any rate, birds that have this particular problem, the problem will be trying to tell what the problem is, because the problems that they're going to exhibit are going to mimic so many other diseases that it'll probably take a laboratory diagnosis to figure it out. And on the other hand, even if they do pick up Klebsiella, depending on the laboratory, they're probably not going to think a whole lot of it if they find something else. Okay. I know I get people all the time sending me notes, emails, and you know, they took a dropping to lab somewhere and they said it had E. coli in it. Well, and yeah, so big deal. You know, if they find a ton of E. coli in there, you know, too numerous to count, that could be a problem, because then we start to look at the same thing with the E. coli as we would with the Klebsiella overgrowth. Something upset it to the point where it's growing out of control, now you got a problem. But as a normal run-of-the-mill thing, E. coli is a normal inhabitant of the intestine of chickens and other animals and humans as well. So just picking it up there doesn't mean a whole lot, unless it's something that somebody can say, you know, you got a little bit more here than you ought to have. A little bit different if you took a sample into the lab and they came back and said, well, you know, you got salmonella in here. Well, that don't belong there and shouldn't be there, and now you got a problem. So there's a big, big difference in who's doing the work and how it's being interpreted, whether it's a dog and cat guy or you know, a real actual poultry vet or whoever the case may be. So anyway, we'll go into some of the symptoms, and you'll know right off the bat. You'll say, oh, yeah, geez, I've seen some of these before, you know. But birds that appear weak, okay, or birds that appear emaciated, depressed, labored breathing, gasping for air, snotty noses, swollen faces, conjunctivitis, which is the swelling around the eye, the redness in the eyelids, and the discharge from the eye, mortality, foamy eyes. If you're doing a post-mortem, pericarditis, which is an infection of the heart sac around the heart, air sacculitis, which is an infection of the air sacs. Then a couple of things that you might see on the outside that still wouldn't tell you 100% that you're dealing with Klebsiella, but you got a problem, a drop in egg production. And you would lose some of the interior quality of the egg, okay, which mimics bronchitis. It could be another one that would do that. It's going to probably take, you know, if you've got birds, most people will medicate. That's generally the way things are approached, and I don't think that's such a bad thing to do. because if you've got birds that are sick, just like you would with a human, the medication usually follows. So if you're going to be medicating with a tetracycline, bump the dosage up. If you're going to be buying the stuff from Tractor Supply, huge heaping tablespoon per gallon of water for that product, and see what it does for you. That generally will tell you, if it's bacterial anyway, because viral might do something for a day or so, but cleaning up any bacterial problems that might accompany a virus, but it'll still persist. If you're giving medications, and generally you can tell, for instance, most bacterial things don't spread as fast as a virus would. For instance, coryza will spread better than mycoplasma or MG or what we call CRD, but none of them will spread as fast as laryngotracheitis or bronchitis. Okay, and the others have bronchitis symptoms, watery eyes, glassy eyes, gasping for air, labored breathing. The birds are in production, your thick egg white will be more watery, thin-shelled eggs, slab-sided eggs, eggs with sandpapery, blotchy, dark, and if it's a white egg, could have a dark spot in it, and I don't mean it's black, but it's darker than the white, off-colored, things of that nature, mortality, all of those kinds of things, okay? So, it's one to watch out for. It's not around every corner, but it is in every bird, pretty much, and has the potential to do some harm. So don't do yourself any more harm than is necessary. Take care of the bird's intestinal tract, and I really feel that you'll have a good, healthy flock with minimum need for antibiotics.
Yeah, and knowledge is power. I mean, a lot of people, I really stress this to a lot of folks, too. I mean, it's not like you, like you said. I mean, when we cover these topics, we cover a lot of topics and a lot of different illnesses, a lot of different diseases, and maybe the newcomer's like, wow, I really don't know if I need to get into this. Is it more than just throwing some feed out there and having a waterer? Sure, if you want to keep them good and healthy. Like you always say, 5-gallon bucket, look at your chickens. That is key.
Oh, yeah.
Examine them, pick them up, touch them. Don't just, oh, here's your feed. See you later. Great. Thanks for the eggs. But, again, we don't. Our goal for this show, because we're all about promoting backyard poultry, and we have been for many years and hopefully many years to come, so we're not trying to scare anybody away. But knowledge is power, and we share this information with you to help you along the way. If you have chickens for 10 years, you may or may not have some illness go on. And if you do, and we hear from a lot of people that do on occasion, having that knowledge is very important. And we've got a lot of folks here that come on the show, like Peter Brown, every Monday, and poultry scientist and professor Dr. McRae comes on twice a month on the Thursdays, and other specialists that we have on. There's a lot that write for the magazine as well, great information. It's not just about blueberries and oatmeal and smiles and hey, cool, look, I'm hip because I keep chickens. So we try to give you the right information regarding that. So
I don't want to be the doomsday person either, but
exactly.
You're absolutely right. Can you get some chickens and put them in your backyard in a reasonable coop with reasonable space with minimum amount of care? Absolutely. We do it here every day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not. I hardly ever go to the coop. Hardly ever. I mean, I go out and look around. You got a few projects still going on out there and everything else. I go out and, like I said, that one little hen, she likes to sit on my shoulder and stuff and likes to get in the feed bucket and all that kind of stuff. But we don't have to medicate them. We don't do anything. We don't even use medicated feed because these are all older birds now, except for one. We've got one baby out there about a month old, and it's just accidental deal. But they're not medicated in any way, shape, or form. We just don't do anything. It's not necessary, and they're happy every day out there doing their thing. And again, these are predominantly roosters running around out here. And if you certainly somebody else's flock may be a different thing, but they're stressing this flock from time to time. You can see it, and you try to take steps to alleviate that. And that's one of the things we did in the beginning, knowing that we were going to have so many roosters versus hens, we decided that plenty of space. Give everybody plenty of space to get away from each other, and it works. And it works. Now, will that work with a super-duper really aggressive bird? I don't know. But it works with these here, and we've got a few here that, you know, roosters are territorial, you know that. And they will run the others off if they come too far on the other side of the yard, and the others, you know, will settle back down. And the same thing, like I said, in the mornings and stuff. The amount of feed and water space is crucial. Because when they get off that roost in the morning, they want to eat. They want to drink. They want to breed. They want to do all that silly stuff first thing in the morning. And then after that, we hardly hear from them, unless there's some turkey buzzard flying over top and they get all excited about it. But other than that, it's not a big deal. And we don't medicate. I promise you, we do not. And, you know, do we have a bird that dies from time to time? Yep. Take them right here to the lab. And everything that has died on the premise here has been something that couldn't fix it anyway. You know, ovarian cancer can't be fixed. And, you know, these are all, you know, you've heard me say it before. This is my geriatric flock. And,
yes.
You know, I mean, Tammy spends more time out there. She'll be fiddling around with this, that, and the other thing, you know, and so on. But I don't have quite the time to do all that. But I like to go out and stand around there for a little bit. But my point being, I'm not out there 4, 5, 6 hours a day, okay? And neither is she. I would say on average she probably spends, you know, between the evening and the morning, she probably spends a couple of hours easily a day out there, you know, going out different times, checking on things. You see, and we have 4 cats that live with the chickens, and they all get along just fine. And they have for years. So, you know, so my point being, can you have a flock of chickens in your backyard and have minimal expenditure of energy to take care of them? Yeah. But, see, we keep a closed flock. We don't let every Tom, Dick, and Harry come walking in here. When we leave here, the gate to the pen where the chickens are is locked. That's it.
You're not going to the poultry auction, and you're not running out and getting a bird here, a bird there, and bringing it back home, and yeah, absolutely.
No, I have recently looked into, I had a company contact me, and I was, because I've been wanting to do this for years, but you can't do it economically. Who is going to pay you to test their birds? Look, if I were going to jump into selling chickens tomorrow of whatever breed, the first thing I would want to do is have the birds that I was getting tested for everything and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it costs, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Let's say you're going to start off with 20 birds, and you're going to use them as your foundation breeding stock, okay? Equal number of males and females, whatever. So you spend $7, $8, $9, $10 a bird. Yeah, I know it's a lot of money. I know everybody doesn't have it, okay? So you spend a couple, $300, $400. Doesn't really matter. But you're going to get a piece of paper in your hand that's going to say that these birds are free from Newcastle, bronchitis, mycoplasma, MG, MS. They're free from avian influenza. The whole nine yards. You could say to people, and you know, you do some random testing every 90 days, and you would have all this paperwork to prove to people, this is what I do. But how much are your birds? Well, you have to pay for this now. My birds, instead of selling you a chick for whatever, $5, they're now $7. And if that isn't worth something to somebody, then you don't need to sell anything to them. But I've looked into it. I have a company contact me here just a couple of weeks ago, and the problem with a lot of the kits that come to test for each individual disease, they come with a lot of stuff, and to do a lot of tests, they're not made for doing onesies and twosies and 5 and 10 and that kind of thing. Okay, and so it becomes difficult, and then the particular one I'm talking about is for the ELISA test, which is one that you can do in a laboratory setting relatively easy, at my level. In other words, when you get into some of the other stuff, you start talking about nuclear materials and stuff. We don't have that kind of disposal and whatever. But the ELISA is not a big deal. It's something, you know, it's something you can run. The test is easy to do and so on. But the reader to read it costs $10,000. So you not only have the cost of the kits, which run, depending on the size of the kit, $200, $300 a piece up, but you also have this $10,000 piece of equipment that you have to buy. You know, and I've been wanting to do this for many, many years, but I just don't see the economic viability of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, people are, I see how it is now. You know, somebody was on Facebook here not too long ago, and rightfully so. I didn't comment at all, but in my own mind, as I read the posts, I took the person's position wholeheartedly. Sick and tired of buying from supposedly the best breeders in the country and getting birds that are sick.
Mm-hmm.
And why are they getting birds that are sick? They're getting birds that are sick because the people on the other end will not spend the money to fix the problem. It's that simple. I read to you several shows ago about the Cornell study that was done.
Yeah, yeah.
About, you know, all the problems that are out there. You know, we used it when we talked about the salmonella thing. You know, salmonella is not a big deal in the backyard setting. It isn't. And this was samples from all over the country. I mean, it was not, I think the biggest sample group came from California. They seem to be the most sophisticated as far as keeping track of things and so on and so forth. But, people just are not going to spend the money to do it the right way. So that's why you end up getting birds that are ill with one disease or another, okay? And you fly by the seat of your pants. And that makes it difficult to get your 10 birds, put them in the backyard, and feed and water them and walk away. Okay? And it's not done purposely. It's done because of the money. Where are you going to take them? Then, and I just had this happen too. This is another thing. Okay? I had a client, long-time client, good friend, been talking to me about a bird that became ill, the second one in the flock, and just was getting out of hand as far as trying to figure out what was going on with it. So we put our heads together and decided to take the bird to the local laboratory. And now it's turned out to be a nightmare. And there is no friendliness from these people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kill them all, put them all down, right out of the box. And I can tell you with that kind of mentality that we're not going to get anywhere. We're not going to bring people on board. We're mm-hmm. not going to get people, you know, to come forward and say, yeah, I want to do this, and I'm willing to do this, you know, and people work with you, you know. Because as soon as they hear that, they, you know, the person called me and said, you know, it was the worst thing I ever did, shouldn't have done it, but you know, it was a consensus between us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of bringing them there either. But there does come a point when you don't have a choice. So anyway,
yeah.
not to belabor the point, you can raise birds very well in a backyard setting, minimum amount of effort, as long as you start out with healthy stock and keep them healthy. And you do that by keeping a closed flock once you get your birds. Now, if you're interested in buying birds and selling, that's going to be an issue. And that's going to make it life a lot tougher.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Peter, thank you very much for joining us today. A lot of great information about the topic and then some, as always. And we wish you all the best. We hope you have a wonderful, wonderful week until next Monday.
My pleasure. We'll see you next week.
Great. Thank you so much. Man, where are you going to get this information, folks? Nowhere. Chicken Whisperer Magazine. And then right here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Hey, visit his website, first.com, firststatevetsupply.com. And take a look at that emergency medicine kit. I'm serious. Many times as we've had people call and Peter tries to help them. And, okay, what do you have on hand? I'm not sure what is, but it ends up being nothing. And you want to, and he's, what a great value. Instead of buying a huge bottle that's going to expire if you don't use it, the emergency medicine kit is just for that initial medication. You give it to your birds while you can then order what you need instead of ordering, you know, huge bottles of all this at great expense and you don't use it after so many years it expires. Now you can have it on hand to give and to start that initial treatment. 3 days sooner than you would before. I mean, birds, they're going to die in 3 days. Could be, maybe, maybe not. But at least you're medicating them. You have it on hand when Peter says, okay, we would like to start on this. go ahead and give them some of that. I'll give them some of this. Oh, okay, I got to go order it, and then it'll take 3 days, and then I can start giving it to them, and you never know. So firststatevetsupply.com, I appreciate you tuning in today. I really do. Tune in weekly, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And I do hope you and your family and friends have a blessed day. God bless everybody.